Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect, presented by Bosby Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Bosby Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I hope everybody's enjoying their families and safe and sound. We are visited today by Dr. Brian Nixon. He is an assistant pastor at Calvary Church. He oversees the publishing and education departments at Calvary. Brian, thanks for sharing your Thanksgiving with us.
Well, Jim, as normal, I'm so blessed to be with you, and I want to wish all of our listeners a happy Thanksgiving. It truly is one of America's great holidays.
Brian, tell me about the traditions in the Nixon household for Thanksgiving.
Oh, boy. In our household, it is range. When we lived in California, we spent a lot of time traveling on Thanksgiving. We'd go to my parents or my wife, Melanie, her family. Every now and then, we would drive down to Southern California and go to her grandparents. But then when we moved to Southern California, we ended up going to Northern California. And, of course, all the events and activities that happen at churches. So it's always a full time for families, of course, but Christians specifically.
You know, Brian, I hadn't thought a lot about Thanksgiving. I've always appreciated the holiday. I think it's a wonderful thing. You're going to tell us a little bit about the history of it. But here's an interesting perspective I have this year. You know, my daughter, Abby, she is actually out of the country right now and was telling me today, lamenting a little bit, that they don't celebrate Thanksgiving where she is. And I thought, wow, I remember now that this is an American thing. Give us some history about how this tradition started in our country, Brian.
Yeah, well, it has a rich historical lineage. You know, there are some indicators that both in England and mainland Europe, you know, there were days, maybe not official days set aside for Thanksgiving, but there were days earmarked for Thanksgiving. But it wasn't until, of course, the Puritans and the Native Americans connected here in America that it really became a thing, specifically here in America. But the story begins in 1620, Jim. In September 1620, the Mayflower leaves Plymouth, England. And on that ship, there was a little over 100 passengers. And most of them were separatists, and we'll get to what separatists and distinguish them between the Puritans here in a moment. But the trip lasted roughly 66 days, and they ended up dropping anchor near Cape Cod, which was a little bit north of where they wanted to be by the Hudson River, where they were intending to be. And if those of you who know the New England states, the Hudson River is more in the New York area. So they were a little bit north of that. And on that ship, as I pointed out, they're mainly separatists. So for those on our listening audience, you need to understand that there's a difference between separatists and Puritans. Puritans were those that wanted to purify the Church of England. They were largely what we would call Anglicans, but they felt that the Anglican Church had gotten strayed too far, and they really wanted to purify it. But also there was a group of separatists. And separatists were those who wanted to separate from the Church of England. And over a period of time, several denominations came from the separatists. Today, we would know them as like Congregationalists or Baptists and some Quakers and Presbyterians. So those were some of the separatist groups. So on this ship, though, were primarily, the majority of them were separatists, those who were wanting to establish unique churches in America. So they landed in 1620, but they ended up staying on the Mayflower because it was really a pretty cold winter. And it wasn't until 1621 that they crossed the Massachusetts Bay and established the village of Plymouth. And then in March 1621, some went ashore. And when they went ashore, they were actually visited by a Native American gentleman, a fellow by the name of Abenaki, who was a Wampanoag Native American. And what was interesting is he all of a sudden realized that he knew the right person to get to come and talk with these Englishmen. So he went and got another Native American by the name of Squanto. And Squanto, interestingly, was a member of another tribe that had been enslaved by an English captain and sent over to London, so he understood English. And while he was under captivity, he escaped and somehow made his way back to North America. So when Abaknai saw that these were English people, he went and got Squanto, and it was really Squanto and these early separatists, what we call Puritans here in America, that began the tradition of Thanksgiving.
And, you know, we all want to have warm, fuzzy feelings, Brian, about we see pictures of how they had Native Americans sitting with them at this gorgeous table, and there were Native American foods, and, of course, we have pictures in our minds, at least, of turkeys. I'm not sure there were a lot of turkeys around at that time, but maybe there were. I'm sure that they were having pheasant and other kinds of meat. Was it really that friendly between the Native Americans and the Puritans at that time?
Well, like most things in history, there is a positive and a negative to this story. And I do appreciate the fact, Jim, that you are pointing out that there is sometimes a little bit of glorification of this. As you pointed out, there's a lovely table and everyone's happy and smiling. And I do think that there were a group of natives that were very, very friendly towards the Europeans. However, a lot of Native American tribes have already had contact with Europeans, and it didn't always turn out well, as is the case with Squanto that I already mentioned, that he was enslaved and taken over to Europe. But generally speaking, the Wampanoag tribe that were the first group that contacted with the Puritans, they were a loose confederation of tribes. They lived in southeastern Massachusetts in the Rhode Island area. And over time, with the first contact of English colonies, There was a semi-friendly relationship, and at that time, their population numbered in the thousands. As a matter of fact, there were 3,000 natives that lived in Martha's Vineyard alone. But then, of course, the sad part enters in the story, and with the arrival of Europeans comes new diseases. And the Wampanoag suffered greatly from the contact with Europeans. Most scholars believe that they were given smallpox, so many, many Native Americans died because of smallpox. And the relationships beyond the Thanksgiving kind of frayed a little bit. England and the Native relationships kind of began to fall apart once a new leader, Abenaki, left the tribal leadership to Massasoit to his son. And what happens after that is fights broke out and deaths on both sides, both the Native American and the Europeans. And so it did get messy. And it even got to the point where the English, Jim, hired other tribes to fight the Wampanoag tribes. So, as an example, the Mohawks were brought in to fight other fellow Native Americans. So that initial picture, if you will, was, I think, a fairly pleasant picture. But then through a series of sickness and fighting, it did turn it didn't turn great. And to a certain extent, it really is a picture where you have people who are being persecuted in Europe, and they try to flee to a new land. They were immigrants. And then you had the natives who were here, and they were trying to be respectful and loving, I think, initially. But then differences of worldview, differences of food and everything else of that nature, it came head on. And so there was conflicts, which sadly are still with us today in some quarters.
Brian, you obviously know a lot about history, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today. And, you know, the early beginnings of Christianity were really based in these peoples from Europe that were, you know, here. And they did have some good intentions. But as we've learned, you know, over the last year with all the civil unrest and so forth, there are people in this country that want to take this history that you mentioned that may be very negative. Very detrimental to, in this case, the Native American people. In some cases, you have people like Thomas Jefferson, who, you know, wrote, essentially was the primary author of the Declaration of Independence. And the first paragraph where he talks about all men being created equal, I don't think there's anyone that would question the truth of that, at the biblical truth of it. But yet when you examine the man, you end up finding out that he was a slaveholder. I even learned that 8 years after the Declaration of Independence, he writes a letter to the Assembly at Virginia, and he says there's three problems with slavery in this country. Again, written by a brilliant man that was a slaveholder. He says, first of all, children of slaves and slaves themselves are going to learn to hate this country. He said that was the first problem with slavery. Number two, he said it teaches men, black or white or any other color, to be tyrannical and to think that they are allowed somehow to lord over other people. But here's the most important one, he said. He said the main reason that this is a problem is because if there should ever be a rebellion of slaves and God were to intervene between the slaveholders and the slaves who are rebelling against their owners, God would not be on the side of the slaveholders. And so just as you're talking here, I see men and women, I see people that are sinful. We know we all are, but you don't think that we ought to erase this history just because it's not the perfect history that we all wish it was.
Yeah, history is chock full of sinful people. And so you can't erase it. It has happened. The way forward is to acknowledge it, repent from it, and then find ways of reconciliation. And you're spot on about what you said about Thomas Jefferson. Most of the early forefathers were slaveholders. And think of it this way, Jim, from the standpoint of our Native American friend. Let's just say in today's modern context, we're sitting here as all Americans, and then let's say China decides they're going to come over and take over and put us Americans on reservations. Well, we wouldn't like that at all. And that was true to what happened to the Native Americans. These foreigners came over and were pushing them out, their land, their property. They had thousands of years of history prior to the Europeans arriving. And it wasn't just the English. We need to remind ourselves of that, Jim. America, in its early founding regions, really is a combination of three major countries. The New England states, so we say today, would be English. And then as you move further south, it was the French who were establishing colonies, primarily in Louisiana, Mississippi area, later sold to America via Thomas Jefferson. But then in the western part of the United States, from the Rocky Mountains over, was Spain. Jim, where we sit today here in New Mexico, this was Spain for 200 years before it was both Mexico and or America. As you think about it, Mexico only had this property for, what, roughly 80 years? Spain had it for about 200 years. But then you look back before that, the Native Americans, they had it for, you know, a few thousand years. So it's one of those situations where incoming groups taking over different people's area is unbecoming. And so our history is chock full of this type of behavior. But as I pointed out, and I appreciate, again, what you said about Thomas Jefferson, but what we need to do is recognize our past, repent of it, and then return to a biblical foundation, at least as far as Christians are concerned. So we recognize what was bad in the past, what was sinful. We repent of it. And a lot of times that means going to the people we hurt the most, be it Native Americans or African Americans, and saying, we are so sorry. This was unchristian-like. And then we have to start moving forward in the right direction. And my hope, even with all of the tensions, the racial tensions, the political unrest in 2020, my hope is that 2021 could be a time where we can move forward. We could recognize some of the things in our past that haven't been Christ-like or becoming, and that we would be able to reconcile in a new way. So again, it's recognizing, remembering, repenting, and then reconciling and moving forward.
I love all that positiveness. And Brian, we're probably going to talk about a few negative things in the history, but there was some cooperation. I know in the notes that you gave me, you showed that Squanto had actually befriended the separatists, and he even taught them how to cultivate corn and grow some other crops now that they were on, I'll call it, North American soil as opposed to in England.
Yeah, exactly. In 1621, when basically Squanto was taken charge over these Europeans, as you said, he befriends them. And in short, Squanto taught these Europeans how to survive in North America, how to cultivate corn, as you pointed out, how to catch fish, which dangerous plants to avoid. So in a way, Squanto helped the separatists survive. And not only that, Squanto, even though he was, you know, enslaved by an English captain, he becomes really that go-between for alliances between various tribes. So thank God for Squanto. I don't know. There's been some people that said that Squanto became a Christian. It's hard to determine. What we do know is that he showed common decency, and the English, at least the Christian English, there started to respect what was going on. But, you know, by 1621, in November of 1621, the Plymouth colonists shared a meal with the Native Americans. So the very first, what we now know as the Thanksgiving dinner or the Thanksgiving meal that was established, took place in November of 1621. And it was organized by a fella by the name of William Bradford and Squanto. And William Bradford, he organized a feast and invited a group of Native Americans that he felt were allies to partake with them. And the festival lasted 3 days. You know, we think our one day of eating on Thanksgiving Day was a lot, but the original Thanksgiving was 3 days. And though William Bradford didn't write about it, one of the chroniclers, one of the people that was with William Bradford, he did. And here's what he wrote. His name, by the way, was Edward Winslow. And Edward Winslow said, "Our harvest began in our governor sent 4 men on the fowling that we might have special manner rejoice together." So William Bradford, the one who was appointed the first governor, sent people to go get other people. And then Winslow writes, "After we had gathered the fruits of our labors, the 4 in one day killed as much fowl," so birds, probably pheasants, as you said, and there were turkeys. Turkeys are natural to America. And he continues to write, "as with a little help aside, served the company almost a week, at which time amongst the recreationers, we exercised our arms, many of the Indians coming amongst us, and among the rest, their greatest king, Massasoit, with 90 men, whom for 3 days we entertained and feasted. And then we went out, killed 5 deer, which they brought to the plantation and bestowed on our governor and upon the captain and others. And although not always be plentiful as it was at this time with us, yet by the goodness of God, we are so far from want that we often wish you partakes of our plenty." So here's the picture Winslow paints. Bradford sends out some men to go get some Native Americans. Native Americans come. They go kill some fowl, some birds, probably turkeys, pheasants, as I pointed out. And then they essentially exercise what we'd call sport exercising, arms. They probably do mock sword fights and mock runs and all of this type of stuff. They basically enjoy each other's company. Then the Native Americans go out, they kill some deer, and they all sit for 3 days and feast in harmony. And most scholars, of course, believe that most of the food out there was of course, Native American influenced. The supplies of the English would have dwindled by this time, so there probably wouldn't have been pies and cakes and, you know, things that we associate with Thanksgiving today. But it would have been corn. It would have been meat. Whether or not the three sisters, what Native Americans termed the three sisters, were there. But that's bean, corn, and you know, squash. And so these type of things, which are native cuisine, which are, you know, indigenous American cuisine, probably were all eaten at that point.
Yeah, really neat. Brian, I'm going to ask you a question that's totally off script, but knowing you the way I know you probably have an answer for that. And this is, as we're talking about the Native Americans that inhabited this land and participated in this feast, what kind of art were the Native Americans producing at that time? Were they drawing, or were they, I guess, not necessarily sculpting, but creating? I know their headdresses were magnificent and all that type of thing. Do you know much about the art of those days?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. You know, a lot of the art that we associate with Native Americans, like, you know, metalwork and some of the more fine leatherwork, really came over from Spain. And so it was the Spanish, particularly the conquistadors, who brought metalwork and a lot of the jewelry. So how the Native Americans, previous to colonization, obviously blankets, basketry, beading, all of these things were very important. And here in New Mexico, we could walk to the west side of town and see some of the petroglyphs. You know, we have Petroglyphs National Monument. As a matter of fact, if I were to go upstairs in my home, I live across from Petroglyphs National Monument, and I could literally look outside one of our rooms and stare directly at Petroglyphs National Monument. And so there were some carvings. There was some artwork. But the earliest art was petroglyphs. It was basketry. It was pottery. And it was some beadwork and some leather work in the sense of skins and so on and so forth. But those were some of the early three or some of the main art that was done by the Native Americans. And when we talk about the agriculture, which I've already pointed out, you know, the various indigenous groups in North America, they ate squash, they ate corn, there were beans, which I noted as the three sisters, but, you know, a lot of fowl, a lot of deer. And so there was really a lot of food, plentiful food, not to mention the bison and such. And of course, when the Europeans had their way, we almost, made the bison extinct. But it really was a plentiful land.
Well, and then you move down the road a couple years, and they had a second Thanksgiving feast.
That's exactly right. In 1622, there is no record of a Thanksgiving feast, probably because the separatists and Puritans, what we know as the Pilgrims, were probably establishing their property and building houses and so on and so forth. But by 1623, again in November, the second Thanksgiving celebration was commenced. And William Bradford, once again, called for a religious fast, then a feast. And by the way, a short word on who William Bradford was. He was the original appointed governor of the area. He was originally from West Riding in northern England. He was originally a Puritan, one who wanted to purify the Church of England. But later he separated from the Church of England and joined the Scrooby Congregation, which were a separatist group that eventually had to flee to Holland because they were persecuted. And he did leave us you know, some documents about that early plantation. It's called Of Plymouth Plantation. And, of course, he was one of the main signatures of the Mayflower Compact. And the Mayflower Compact was the first European agreement on U.S. soil. And it was signed in 1620. So the year they landed, they signed the Mayflower Compact, which basically kind of gave a little bit of governance where William Bradford was appointed the governor. And then, of course, they went out, had the Thanksgiving meal in 1621 with the Native Americans, and by 1623 had another meal with the Puritans, Pilgrims, and Native Americans.
And then based on your notes, Brian, I'm reading 179 years later, George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that the Europeans didn't have Thanksgiving feasts and weren't thankful people, but there was no official declaration, if you will, of Thanksgiving as an official holiday. It wasn't until 1789, as you've pointed out, that George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation. And essentially in that, he called all Americans to express gratitude. But even then, he didn't make it an official holiday. He just said, hey, we should be thankful people. We need to thank God for what he's given us. And so he gave a proclamation. And it wasn't until 1817, Jim, where New York became the first state to adopt Thanksgiving as an annual holiday. So even after George Washington was long gone, Thanksgiving kind of was still an underground holiday. But in 1817, New York adopt the holiday. And then in 1827, a lady by the name of Sarah Josepha Hale launched a campaign to establish Thanksgiving as a national holiday. And many have forgotten about Hale, but during her day, she was a well-known person. She was a writer. She was an advocate, as we said, for Thanksgiving. We best know her as from the little nursery rhyme, Mary Had a Little Lamb, but she did much more than that. She worked tirelessly to make Thanksgiving an official holiday. She worked for 36 years on the behalf of giving Thanksgiving as a national holiday. And it wasn't until 1863 that Abraham Lincoln instituted the holiday. And he did it during the height of the Civil War. So what he did is he set the date at the final Thursday of November. There was some fluctuation and changes post-Lincoln, but eventually it was settled on for what we know today. So think of that, Jim. From 1789, from the time where George Washington issued the first proclamation, to 1863, where Abraham Lincoln instituted the holiday, Thanksgiving has kind of went up and down throughout the history of America.
Well, even though we sometimes emphasize the early history back in 1621, where Native Americans had a meal with the Puritan contingent, even though we kind of glorify that and maybe exaggerate it, the hope of that camaraderie, the hope of that peace, that hope of the gift of being with other people and giving them something and treating them well, that's not really a bad thing, is it, Brian?
No. I mean, Thanksgiving's for all people. It's not just for Christians, though I think Christians, can be some of the most thankful people in that we're not only thankful for what God has given us, in natural theology in the world, but we're thankful for his son, Jesus Christ. But I also do believe, Christians can learn from the past, Jim. I've pointed out that, we need to remember what we did. We need to repent of those things that were wrong. And then we need to reconcile those areas that were not so forthright and good. And when we look back at the history of the Europeans involvement with the Native Americans, there's so many black eyes on the part of the Europeans. You know, we did some horrific things to both Native Americans and, of course, later African Americans. But there are some positive examples for us. And I'm just going to highlight one, Jim. William Penn, when he left England, his father was given a big portion of land as a payoff because the King of England owed William Penn's father some money. So instead of giving him money, he gave him land in the New World. Well, William Penn was a new convert through Quakerism, and he came over with a group of like-minded people and established what we know as Pennsylvania. In the day, Pennsylvania was much bigger than the state is today. It covered a larger landmass. But William Penn believed strongly that Native Americans and African Americans should be treated fairly. So when he got here, he traveled to the various colonies of and tribes of Native Americans and introduced himself and said he was a man of peace, and he wanted to make sure that that all Native Americans were treated well. And if there was any land exchange, and in the case of the Quakers, there was, William Penn insisted that the Native Americans be paid a fair price for any land that was purchased from them. And if there was any disagreement between the Native Americans and settlers, William Penn insisted that a committee of equal number of Native Americans and settlers resolve the dispute. So what we find here is in William Penn's Quaker colony of Pennsylvania, the foundings of representational and democratic government here in the United States. As a matter of fact, many scholars believe that William Penn did as much for the government system as Thomas Jefferson and others. But Penn did sign treaties with the Native Americans, and they lasted for many, many years. And as a matter of fact, he signed the Treaty of Shackmoxon in 1682, and it was a historic meeting place along the Delaware River, and it was between the Quakers and the Delaware Native Americans, and it was probably located somewhere along the lines of Pennsylvania today. And it was a historic meeting where two groups got together and worked peacefully and resolutely on how things were going to go. So I think if there is a great example of a Christian influence that did it right and well, it would have been William Penn and the Quaker colony of Pennsylvania. Now, of course, after William Penn died, it didn't always stay nice and lovely. But by and large, that could be the best example of a harmonious gathering post that initial Thanksgiving dinner.
Awesome word, Brian. Hey, we're going to have one more segment with Dr. Brian Nixon. We're talking about the history of Thanksgiving. Brian, in our last segment together, I want to ask you a little bit about how we should be thankful and how all of this history and how what we know about the Bible should go into our attitude about being thankful for where we're at and what we have. So stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. Brian Nixon right after these messages.
At Krecker Law, we believe in making things right when things go wrong. If you are injured, you shouldn't have to go it alone. You deserve someone who will listen to you and fight for you. We believe that you deserve to protect your future, protect your family, and protect your loved ones. We believe in challenging insurance companies and standing up to bullies. We believe that David can beat Goliath. 843-7777.
The Krecker Law Firm. Righting wrongs, protecting your future. The KrekaLawFirm.com.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a home for these children with us by making a tax-deductible donation online at acch4kids.org or by calling us at 898-5520. 2020 has been a challenge for all of us. Our children are growing up in a safe and secure Christian home because of your generous support. At this critical time, we need your support now more than ever. We receive no state or federal funding. Please consider a year-end donation to help us continue to provide a loving home for our children. Go to acch4kids.org and click on the Donate Now button or call us at 898-5520.
Every day, children and teens will find themselves in the foster care system.
Because their parents can't take care of them.
Because of abuse or neglect.
They'll find themselves
scared,
angry, alone.
As a Christian foster parent, you can open your heart and open your home to a child or teen in need.
You can change your life.
To learn more about Christian foster care, call the Bear Foundation, 505-888-1362, christianfostercare.org.
This is A Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lesko.
Did you know that prayer also unites yourself within yourself? You are not single. You are like God, the God who is triune, Father, Son, Spirit, three persons, one God, has made us in His image. And in His image made, we have body, we have soul, we have spirit. And sin messes with that unity. Sin messes with that union. When we do things with our body that we ourselves in our conscience know not to be right, we are doing something that is against ourselves. It leads to this disruption of the unity. So sin always divides. It divides you within yourself. That's what guilt is. I'm conflicted because I shouldn't have done what I did. What are you doing? You're dividing your own unity.
For more Fresh Thoughts, go to LeviLesko.com.
Hi, this is Carrie Jobe, and here's a special word from an incredible pastor in my life, Pastor Robert Morris.
John 3:16, the most famous verse of the Bible, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life." It hit me just like a ton of bricks this week that He is someone's Son. And I know that it should have hit me before this strongly, but I just began thinking about the Father and the Son, and that the Father gave His Son, and that they have a father-son relationship. How much love would it take for a father to give his child for someone else? How about this? How about for a stranger? Here's the question. How about for someone that doesn't even care? And that the Father gave His only begotten Son.
For more worship in the Word, visit PastorRobert.com.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
As often as you can, you want to try to do things that are more energizing to you than draining. When possible, if there's something that you just don't like and you're a leader and you can actually empower someone else who loves doing it, delegate that. Or you want to eliminate it. There are some things that we don't like doing that don't really move the needle. Just stop doing those things. Or automate it. In other words, create a system that gets that task done without a lot of energy from you. When possible, you should also be growing and doing the things that are in your sweet spot that really bring fulfillment, that maximize your gifts and your production. You want to do more of what energizes you. Always create the rhythms for your peak production and fulfillment. You can't create more time, but you can create more energy.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
Here's Rob West with today's Money Wise Minute.
Happy Thanksgiving. We've come to celebrate this day with feasts of turkey and all the trimmings and lots of pumpkin pie. We watch endless parades and a marathon of football games on TV. But let's not forget what this day is really about. Since pilgrim times, this day has been set apart to thank God for the time, talent, and treasure He's given each of us. If we don't first recognize God's abundant provision in all its forms, it's difficult to be grateful for it. We should be thankful for life itself, for our family and friends, the resources He's entrusted to us, and above all, the priceless gift of His Son, Jesus Christ. And we should be thankful every day, not just the fourth Thursday in November.
listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. We are with Dr. Brian Nixon, Calvary Church Assistant Pastor. He's also the overseer of the publishing and educational departments at Calvary Church. We appreciate you, Brian, being here. You're a frequent contributor to the program, and I can talk to you about art. I can talk to you about history. I can talk to you about the Bible. We even talked about how people should be kind to one another after this year's election, which was a crazy time. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Jim, it's my pleasure, and hopefully our listening audience were informed, enlightened by our little historical overview of Thanksgiving.
Brian, I can't help but think about how little history seems to teach us or how little we learn. You know, the Old Testament is filled with stories about the Hebrews and the Exodus and having to wander in the desert for 40 years and so many lessons they did not learn in that time. It's just amazing. And it seems to be just a pattern. And it all has to do, of course, with the sinful nature that we have. So what I wanted to ask you now is, as we're having a nice meal together, I know that there's people that are less fortunate, but I know there's people literally battling every day in Albuquerque. I know Holly Slade with Feeding New Mexico Kids is battling in partnership with other churches to provide a nice meal for people that are less fortunate. So as we indulge in you know, having more than we normally have, what should be our thoughts and what should we be thankful for?
Oh boy, I will start with the three F's. I mean, I think, you know, we definitely have to start with those. And the three F's, of course, are our faith. We have to be thankful that God has sent his son, Jesus Christ, that we have a living faith. We serve a living God. And that should be the top of any Christian's, you know, list of things we should be thankful for. But then the second F is family. You know, we should always be thankful, whether we came from a great family or not a great family. We should be thankful that we were brought into this world and have life and existence. And so I think family. And then I would say the third F is your friends. You know, be thankful for your friends, for the people that support you, that love you, and encourage you. So the three F's, faith, family, and friends there. But then there's even, you know, other things we should be thankful for. We should be thankful for our health. Even if it's not great in a time of COVID right now, I know many people are struggling. But the fact that God has given health providers, such as doctors and nurses, we should be thankful for freedom of religion, that we could express our faith in America as we do. We should be, you know, even thankful for the food that the Lord has provided us. You know, even simple things, Jim, like pets and the education we've received, our home life, things as simple as books. And you know, a bed to sleep on, laughter with people, you know, the list could go on and on of you know, even the metaphysical things such as love and hope, and all of these things that really not only should define Christians, but I think all people can be thankful for this holiday season.
Brian, if I were to hand you a dumbbell that weighed 25 pounds and I had you start doing dumbbell curls, you know, one arm at a time, first your right, then your left, and you had a regimen of doing curls over a period of, say, 6 or 8 weeks, that muscle, your biceps would get stronger.
Correct.
Why do we have a hard time understanding that that's kind of what we do in church? We're exercising spiritually. We're giving thanks. We're refocusing. We're being reminded by the scriptures. We're being reminded by our pastors. You are, I know, just inundated all the time with reading, and you're helping Pastor Skip publish books. And aren't all of these things similarly designed to help us exercise and stay focused and stay in shape and keep the messages of this world and the noise of this world from interfering with us?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, of our Christian discipleship, which is what I would call, or even spiritual formation is another terminology, is paramount for Christians. And there's so many things that we need to exercise in our life to be productive and fruit-producing people. But I think there's some foundational things that correlate, Jim, to another early meal. We just talked about an early meal between the English pilgrims and Native Americans. Well, there was another early meal that was established. We call it the Last Supper with Jesus, where he served his disciples and he said, love one another. So there's that meal. But then there was another meal after Jesus had ascended to heaven where the disciples got together. And I think there in Acts 2, the end of Acts 2, beginning in verse 42, we kind of get a template of how we're to exercise those muscles, the basic building blocks of what Christians need to be doing to stay healthy and well as believers. And the writer of Acts, Luke, tells us that the disciples continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine. So they read and studied the Bible. They fellowshipped with one another. So you had in-person fellowship. I know it's very difficult right now with COVID, but when we get an opportunity to fellowship in person, we need to run back as fast as we can. Then they broke bread. They participated in communion. And then they prayed for one another. And then we learn a little bit later in the text that they went and preached the gospel. So there was evangelism. These five things, Jim, are, if you will, the barbells that we should be lifting as believers. So it's studying and reading our Bibles. That's the apostles' doctrine. We should be in a church fellowshipping with other Christians. We should be participating in communion, and we should be praying and evangelizing. These are, if you will, the key factors of what Christians should be benching, to use your analogy, on a weekly basis. But of course, the list goes on and on once you get specific. You know, we should be defined by love. And if we want to know what love is, we turn to 1 Corinthians 13. We should be defined by peace. Paul says, live peacefully with all people. So Paul says we should be defined as people walking in the Spirit. We should be defined as people who are kind to other people. The Bible is chock full of challenges for Christians to be living in today's day and age.
Boy, I just love what you have to say today. I mean, it's so encouraging, and I hope people, as they're either preparing now for a meal here late this afternoon or early evening, that they really think about what they're thankful for. Brian, I want to ask you about just people encouraging people. I know that sometimes to ourselves we can say, gee, I'm really thankful for my mother and father, which I am. But I know so many people don't actually go to those people and say thank you.
Yeah, I think that is important. I mean, it's easy just to, you know, in the quietness of our hearts, just go, boy, I'm so thankful. But I think words matter. And when you go up to someone, particularly someone that you've wronged, and going back and asking for forgiveness or apologizing, that is a deep thing. And I think the same is true for anything. You know, just telling someone you love them or you care for them or, you know, give them a hug. You know, post-COVID, of course, but all of those are important things. And I think even just a simple handshake, you know, Jim, I know we're about to wrap it up, but let me put everything we've talked about in a nice package. There was a famous artist, American artist. His name was Edward Hicks. He lived from 1780 to 1849. And he is known for painting the same image over and over and over again. He basically was a guy with he did deviate in other areas, but he's really known for painting the same image over and over. and it's called the Peaceable Kingdom. And it's well known. You could go online and look at Edward Hicks' Peaceable Kingdom and all its variations. But what he was a devout Quaker, and in all his paintings, he tried to capture what he felt the Quakers were trying to do, Christians in the New World. So in his paintings, you'll find a child who represents Christ sitting among animals who he's thankful for and leading them. And off in the corner in all of these paintings, you will find William Penn shaking a hand, extending kindness to Native Americans. And in usually all the paintings, the various ones have different scenes and different backgrounds of nature. But I think in the painting, so much is captured. Jesus, as a child, is there. He's really the centerpiece of what's going on. But Jesus is being kind to the natural world because it's a gift from God. He's pointing in some of the paintings to his people, fellow Christians, in this case Quakers, who are treating Native Americans with kindness and decency. And in some of Edward Hicks' other paintings, you'll have other children as well, and they kind of represent the Europeans that were present in Europe at the time. So Edward Hicks painted this painting over and over again. I forgot how many times he painted it, but there's a dozen or so of these paintings. But I think it captures not only that first Thanksgiving of Native Americans and Europeans gathering, but it also gives us an idea of a biblical version of what should have happened, of kindness on the part of Christians, extending hand and friendship to people that may not be like us or may not even believe like us, but we're called to love them, to care for them. And in the midst of all this, they're surrounded by animals and nature, all gifts from God. So Thanksgiving is not only a time to remember our faith, family, and friends, but it's to remember God's blessings in all things, in everything he's giving us, from his creation to the full cosmos, down to, you know, the day-and-day endeavors of Christian character and what it means to be Christ followers in the world today.
Brian, I'm so blessed that you were with us today, and I pray you and your family are going to enjoy just a great holiday, a great time of Thanksgiving and loving one another. And this whole season, you know, we celebrate the birth of Christ coming up, and I'm thinking the whole time you're talking, I can't wait to talk to Brian about Christmas.
That's going to be a fun one, Jim. It's going to be fun. I appreciate you having me on, and once again, to all of our listeners, happy Thanksgiving. Thank God for his beautiful blessings, and just love the ones you're with.
Amen. Dr. Brian Nixon, thanks so much for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Thank you, Jim.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.